it's Leslie Gold for America Weekend. Have you ever seen two working women with a family try and schedule a night out to have dinner together? It's near impossible. We're stressed out, we're overwhelmed, and we're totally exhausted most of the time, and that seems to be the norm, especially for women. So why are we so busy all the time? We never seem to have time for ourselves. What happened? Technology was supposed to make things faster and easier, and we were supposed to have equal partnerships around the house and share household and child-rearing duties with our spouse. Yet it seems like today we feel lucky when we have time to take a bath rather than a shower. And if you feel like you're in a state of permanent busyness, you'll want to read the book of our next guest. Bridget Schulte is an award-winning journalist for The Washington Post and The Washington Post Magazine. She happens to have won a Pulitzer Prize, and her book is called Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. Hi, Bridget. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Is this more of a female problem, a uniquely female problem, or is it split evenly between the two genders?
You know, I think that this has long been seen as a woman's issue. And what I discovered in my book is that it really is not. It may have started that way. I tend to think of particularly working mothers as the canaries in the coal mine, if you will. But right now, feeling stressed out, burned out, and overwhelmed is really something everyone is feeling. You know, not just working mothers, but working fathers are actually showing in surveys that they are more stressed out by work-life conflict than mothers are. But then you also look at surveys of people of all ages, whether they have children or not, and they're feeling very pressed for time, very overwhelmed by work demands, very stressed out by almost the constant 24/7 of carrying technology around with them, too.
Mm. You have to, though, Bridget, tell the story of that famous Thanksgiving in your house, because when I heard that, if you could do sort of a brief version of it, it's like almost every woman in the world can identify with that and the rage that would come from us from living that.
Well, you know, it's funny. You talked about in your introduction, like, weren't we supposed to have these equally shared housework and childcare by now? You know, the idea was once women went into the workplace in the early 1970s that men would just help out, right, and pick up half the load, and that really did not happen. So I'll set the scene. It was 2 o'clock on a Thanksgiving a couple years ago when I was working on the book, and I invited 18 people over for dinner. You know, what was I thinking? Martha Stewart was living in my brain, and I had searched for the perfect tablecloth, and I was stressing out about the centerpieces, and I wanted the house to look perfect because women are still associated with a house, right? And
mm-hmm.
It comes in, if people come in and it's a mess, they don't blame my husband. They look at me and think there's something wrong with me. And I was very caught up and worried about that. And the kitchen looks like a bomb has gone off. I've got vegetable peels and flour every which way. And my husband comes over to the fridge and he opens it up, and I think, oh, good, he's going to put the turkey in the oven because it's huge and raw and people are coming in a few hours. And he takes out a six-pack of beer. And he looks at me and he said, I'm going to go help my friend with his turkey. And okay. I looked at him and I said, your friend is smoking a turkey, so you're going to go and sit on his patio and drink beer watching this turkey smoke? And he sort of shrugged and he walked out the door.
How you refrained from stabbing him in the eye with a knife? I don't know. That for that alone, you should get a Nobel Peace Prize, never mind a Pulitzer Prize. That was amazing.
Well, I was so livid. It was funny. I did. I had a knife in my hand. I did have it. I was chopping vegetables, and you know, it was very tempting at that moment. So I was livid and full of rage and so angry. And I thought back, we'd been married over 20 years at that point, and so much of our marriage, I had become so angry and resentful because I write in the book, it's not like I had it all. I was doing it all. I mean, my husband didn't know where the dentist was for the kids. He'd never taken him to the pediatrician. If there was a snow day or a sick day, I was the one that flexed my schedule and I stayed home. Both because I wanted to, but I also felt like I should. That's mm-hmm. what a good mother, quote-unquote, should do. So when Tom walked out the door, my husband, I was livid, but I was also really profoundly sad because it really hit me at that moment. Talk about having an aha moment. you know, we had started out saying we would be equal partners, and how had it gotten so bad that, you know, we were really, we'd fallen into these very traditional roles, with the only difference being that I worked full-time on top of it.
Right. But, you know, what you point out in your book also, Overwhelmed, it's not only the time we spend doing everything and being busy. It's the worry associated with it. Like, you're always the one to take your son to the dentist, for instance. It's the managing everything. It takes up the mental space in your head. It's not just the time.
That's exactly right. What I discovered in researching my book, I discovered that psychologists and sociologists had a beautiful term for what I experienced all the time, and they call it contaminated time. And I called it the tape loop that never ended in my head. I was always constantly thinking about, oh my goodness, I didn't do this at work, and I forgot that, and ooh, what about this carpool, and what are we going to have for dinner? It was kind of like when the toilet's running, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was just constantly going like the CNN ticker or something across my brain, so that you could be in a moment that would look like leisure or you should be relaxed, but on the inside, I was just racing through my thoughts. It was crazy. And that can lead to feeling very time-pressed, because your perception, our perceptions of reality and our perceptions of time are actually much realer than what that looks like from the outside. But you're right, it takes incredible emotional and mental energy, and that can be very exhausting.
What is the first step in finding time for yourself, or finding time, as you put it in the book, to play?
Right, and the first thing is, when I first started the book, I didn't think play or leisure time was important. You know, I defined my identity not just by my family and being a mother and a wife, but by my work. My work was very important in terms of figuring out who I was. And I thought I was too busy to play. I didn't think it was important. And I really changed my mind in the course of writing this book. And that's really in leisure time, in play, that we become really most fully human. That's when we have peak human experience. And it requires sort of a kind of a time out of time almost to get away from the grind, to get out of your head and really into the moment to feel fully alive. So part of that is I really, first of all, becoming aware of the pressures out there, the cultural pressures. Right now at work, we work among the longest hours of any advanced economy. There's huge pressure to work and work all the time and show up and have face time in the office. So understand that that's very real. Understand the pressures to, even though women's our roles have changed so much, the world around us has not. What I really realized is we are so much on the bleeding edge of this huge cultural change in terms of gender roles and men and women, and we haven't figured it out, and it's very confusing. And so our laws and our policies still very much support, and a lot of our attitudes still very much support breadwinner, homemaker families, even though the majority of children are not raised in those families. They're raised by working parents, single and dual-income working parents. So we have this real disconnect between what we expect people to be and do and what they really are. So be aware of that and really learn to set your own priorities that work for you and your family. So awareness, setting your own priorities, taking a pause to disrupt the cycle of busyness and really think about what's important to you, because life really is short, you know, and the more you're aware of that, the easier it will be to make choices that that are more in line with your own values. And then the last thing is really find people who share your values, because it's very difficult to try to change and push back against the status quo. So find a network of support with people who think like you do. Create your own network of like-minded people. Create your own group to conform to. That's really important.
You know, I only have maybe another 30 seconds with you, but listening to you, I think some of that is hard. I mean, for someone like you, who's an award-winning writer, or some other woman or man with a big career, we get so much of our satisfaction from our jobs. We even derive a lot of our identity from our jobs as well. So it's hard to know when you're putting just too much time and energy into that one corridor of your life. And when this busyness is sort of trumping your happiness, it's hard to know when you've crossed that line, I think.
It is hard to know. And I think the first thing to do is just really be aware of how you're feeling. because it's a great value we have in the United States of hard work, but we are mixing that up with overwork, and it's the overwork that's making us sick, it's stressing us out, and it's getting in the way of living a good life and doing good work. Mm. So overwork isn't serving anybody.
Thank you, Bridget. Bridget Schulte has been our guest. She's an award-winning journalist, and her book, which you should get, even if you don't have time to read it, you'll fit it in, is called Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time, and almost everyone can relate to that. Bridget, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's Leslie Gold for America Weekend. It's the Envision Radio Network.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Did you know there's one time your brain always listens to you and it reacts accordingly? In this one instance, it always does as you ask. Here's the brain science of it. The human brain loves failure. Sounds strange, right? Well, get this. The minute an individual thinks, this is too tough, I can't do it, I think I'll fail, the brain says, okie dokie, and 0.4 seconds after your failing thought, your brain vetoes all possibilities. Then 0.2 after the veto, your brain kicks in actions designed to fail. What's the cheap psych trick? People who achieve take control of their brain and constantly remind themselves, I know I can do this. I've done it before. Sometimes you have to remind your brain that you're in charge. Otherwise, hey, it's got a mind of its own. Got a question or a comment? Love to hear from you at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Order in the court.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. When the Clark's son got a divorce, their former daughter-in-law told them that her children will not be visiting. They've started a new life, and she doesn't want to confuse the children with too many relatives. The Clark's are heartbroken because they adore their grandchildren, but what can they do? In this case, do grandparents have legal rights? The Final Verdict after this.
Have back taxes taken control of your life, your bank account, your paycheck? It's time to take back control and avoid tax liens, bank levies, garnished wages, and criminal charges. Take control today and call U.S. Tax Shield now at 800-524-6201.
In the past, grandparents' visitation wasn't even considered by the court. But recently, states have recognized a grandparent's right to visit if it's in the child's best interest. The Clarks successfully petitioned the court for visitation rights. And that's the final verdict.